It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. A brand new week begins here at the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's our little home there, HeadOn.live. It's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Yes, and if you pop by right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and is, in fact, Sparky today. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is the second full week of broadcasting here at the Horn in the month of March 2021. The Ides of March are only 7 days away, and it's real convenient because March 1st was a Monday, so that means it's just easy. So this is Monday, and it is a Moran Monday, and we have Morans, surprisingly enough. Oh, what a beautiful few days it's been here. Hopeful harbingers of spring, and well, we didn't have to wait for the first Robin to return here to the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, because she's been here all along. Ah! How about that? Yes. All right, we'll just pretend I didn't do that, won't we? Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is, in fact, no different. That means thanks going out to our 8th, 7th, and 6th day of the month subscribers over the course of the weekend. Thanks indeed, very kindly, going out to Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you to Marcia. Thank you to Brendan. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Dwayne. Thank you all very kindly. Thank you, Reed. Thank you, James in Illinois. Thank you to Brock. And thanks as well to John. And thanks to Michael in Madison. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the sorority of Leans. Thank you to Bob. And thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. And thank you to our buddy Don in West Tennistan. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. Thank you to David for jumping in. Back on the 5th. Thank you very much. Thank you to Gary and Gaia. Thank you all ever so kindly for helping to get us within striking distance of finishing funding last week. We're very close. We're about $100 away from finishing off with Friday's funding. And that means we've got a fundraising goal for the evening of $400. And that's where it stands. And that's how we keep the program on the air. So if you want to help out, well, the PayPal button or the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. If you'd like to become a new Patreon subscriber, just click on Contribute and follow the breadcrumb trail there. If you'd like to help out with my ongoing quest to fund oral surgery and reconstructive stuff and prosthetics and yuck, all of that. Well, GoFundBob takes you there, and we are $570 away from the halfway mark, which is kind of where I said we'd... Right, yes. okay. This just rolled in. There's been a goddess of irony sightings on previous night's program. You revealed that Joe Manchin is worth $7.62 million. I have a simple question: are those in NATO round silver dollars? Were they in any way sponsored by Warsaw Pact wooden nickels? You're signed our buddy Dave trying to work out the finances in the blind. It's all in coal dollars, Dave. Coal. Dirty, filthy, nasty, vicious, toxic, terminal coal. Right. Yeah. It seems like this being more in Monday, I guess we're gonna have some Joe Manchin chat. Although that's not where we're going to go with here in a second, but courtesy of Dave number 11, a piece from the week by Joel Mathis. I can't quite bring myself to see Joe Manchin as a villain. And goes from there. Suggesting it's wrong to look at Joe Manchin as the 51st vote against anything good. And talks about how rational he is for his positions. And, you know, something that I've said, well, West Virginia voters are fairly conservative. Fairly? Fairly? We voted harder for Donald Trump this last time through than the first time through. Stop it. Fairly? We're to the right of Genghis fucking Khan here anymore. We didn't used to be. We used to have some common freaking sense, but, well, you know what? We may touch on that whole issue here. So, Dave number 11, I'll finish reading this and probably scream later in the night. I've seen a couple of these so far. The Democrats need more Joe Manchins. Oh, please. Yeah, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I am, because, we've got the usual beginnings to the program. Like a lot of you out there, 23 for 23, Joey writes, like a lot of you out there, Jeffrey, Richard, and I watched in horror as the new corporate and Joey, I'm not going to use that word to describe Senator Sinema from Arizona. I'm going to try not to use that word to describe any woman, man, beast of the field. Because, frankly, sex work is brutal work, hard work. And especially not on International Women's Day am I going to refer to any woman, whether I agree with her or not, as another word for prostitute. Not going to do it. It's wrong. We shouldn't do it. We should be better than that. We're progressives, remember? We're liberals. But anyway, I watched in horror as Kyrsten Sinema assisted in striking down a sharp hike in the minimum wage. Richard doesn't like Kyrsten Sinema anyways because she, according to Richard, is anti-Israel, and the fact that she would strike down the potential hike of the minimum wage during Shabbat especially drew his ire because, according to Richard, back in the days of Pharaoh, the Jews worked for no wage at all as they were slaves building a wall for Pharaoh's Egypt. Well, let's remember there is absolutely no archaeological or other scientific evidence of the so-called enslavement, and it doesn't exist. Great story, but there's no evidence that it actually happened. But Richard yelled, That woman is a schmuck to kill good wages for hardworking people on the Sabbath, no less. In Arizona, a border state that King Pharaoh Trump's border wall went down just like King Pharaoh Lago's 2020 presidential election bid. Those are quality. Meanwhile, Jeffrey was so angry that he turned his two prongs atop his head toward the television, whipped back his neck, and slammed it right into the TV set. Jeffrey's the hardest-working giraffe in politics, and he was pissed as he snorted and hissed at cinema as she thumbed her nose at the hardworking American people. Jeffrey yelled at the wounded TV, "Hey, cinema, why don't you take your thumb down curtsy and stick it? Yes, turn that thumb the other way and shove it up your..." Jeffrey uses some lawyer lingo since Richard the Lawyer was president. Present. Not president. Present. "Ms. Cinema, henceforth and from this day forward, you will no longer be known as Ms. Cinema or Senator Cinema, but rather you shall be rendered the new name of, wait for it, Senator Cinema, henceforth, from this day forward, with your thumb up your ass, you shall be accorded the new name of Senator Enema." Oh, dear. Oh, dear. The llama nodded her head slightly at that. Good job, Jeffrey. No question. Senator Kirsten Enema is the new enemy of the left because she pandered to the right. I don't like the word enemy, but, you know, this is Joey's Journal, not mine. Jeffrey has another thought. What is it with these controversial Kirstens in the Democratic caucus? Maybe, you know, that maybe it's time to retire Karen and replace it with Kirsten. Although, this is funny. I posted a new photo over on my Instagram page, and a friend of mine looked at it and said, because I had used the face app thing to sort of see what young sorority girl me would have looked like. And I posted that with an admission that I had messed with the photo via face app. And a friend of mine saw it and contacted me privately and said, "Oh, my God, you look like such a Karen." There was much laughter had by all. Well, anyway, back to the Journal. Sunday night, Jeffrey and I realized we needed to get Richard a new television. After we picked up the new television, we stopped by the local Chili's restaurant, where it was quite busy. The service was slow, but we understood because both of us worked in restaurants at different points in our lives. Jeffrey was a cook in a high-end restaurant, naturally. I don't know how Jeffrey kept from banging his head against the fire extinguisher hood. It had to hurt. And I, Joey says, was a soda jerk, and sometimes I soda still am. That's quality, okay? That's the nasty punnery that I've come to expect. Yeah. However, not tonight. The food was taking a long time to get to the table, so Jeffrey and I just amused ourselves as we watched the NBA All-Star game featuring LeBron's team against Durant's team. Jeffrey loves hoops, you know, with all the tall guys, and speaking of high flyers, as the crow flies, we were just a mile from LeBron's palatial estate in West Akron. Jeffrey made the point that LeBron wears number 23, and so does his son, a sophomore playing at an L.A. prep school. Jeffrey and I were also discussing the fact that just recently Tiger Woods was in the news and how ironic it is that the greatest golfer of all time and the greatest basketball player of all time share the same birthday, December 30th, with LeBron being 7 years, Tiger's junior. I don't know how you define all-time great in basketball, but LeBron will eventually pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and become the NBA's all-time leading scorer. It's believed that LeBron has two goals at this point, with one being to pass Jabbar and the other to play with his son on the same court at the same time in the NBA. And that might just happen with 23-23, LeBron and LeBron Jr. Food finally came, and it was so good, and Chili's checks are always so reasonable, as ironically the check only came to $13.23. Our server was definitely one of those hard-working American people, and was so nice that we could not help but give her a $10 tip. Jeffrey would like the last shot.
Yes, it was a slam dunk to tip the server so generously you could have cut the irony with a knife when Joey added up the bill with the tip, and at the bottom of the bill were the numbers $23.23.
Well, now. This has been Joey's Journal for More Enema Monday, the 8th day of March, with Giraffrey calling the cable company to hook up Richard's brand new TV. Oh, it's terrible when the giraffe takes out your TV. And so the $23.23 slam dunk challenge is on the table to help us
knock down last week's fundraising and hopefully get us to a good running start on this one, the new week. Yeah, meanwhile, notes begin. Notes coming in. Matt in San Francisco with a question. Any truth to Joe Manchin paying his employees an average of $11.01? So his position of the minimum wage target of $11 an hour is really just Joe looking out for his own interest? If he was able to get that passed, he could say he pays his employees above minimum wage. Is it really just that simple? Oh, God, I hope not. Although, at this point in time, I am past surprise. I keep saying I am, but I am. I'm past surprise. Can't see Joe Manchin as a villain, Steve in New York asks. Let me help you. Try living on $9 an hour. Yeah, and I was told that there would be a... I don't know how it turned out. I hope more than one person showed up. But I saw a notification that there was going to be a protest outside Kyrsten Sinema's office in Arizona for her minimum wage vote. God, it was just a lousy thing to do. But hey, we're giving her grief because of the way she did it. And maybe she stood out by doing it that way. But save some grief for Senators Coon and Carper of Delaware, Manchin, of course, Shaheen and Hassan from New Hampshire, Angus King of Maine. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, we're missing one. Oh, well. But save some opprobrium for them as well. Because there were eight senators who told poverty wage-earning Americans to stick it up their ass. Yeah. Yeah, as Arnold in PA said, what a yummy outfit she had on. What a terrible dirtbag she is. And, you know, she is, for me, with Kyrsten Sinema, it was the nexus between her status as a member of the LGBTQ community, plus the LGBTQ plus community, and the fact that there are millions of members of that community who labor under the lash of poverty wages. There are millions more who are everyday Americans who aren't members of the LGBTQ plus community. But when you shank your own family, that sucks extra nasty. And apparently, she doesn't like the attention she's receiving. And has decided to, in the words of The Hill, thank you, Ralphs, for sending this along. Senator Sinema is pushing back. Well, I've learned some new things of late, things I never would have paid attention to before, really. And so when she showed up and did her little dip like she was in front of an icon of the Blessed Virgin, that was just shitty and snarky. And by the way, it did not help that in the course of shanking millions of American workers working for poverty wages, she A, patted Moscow Mitch McConnell on the back as if they're pals, and B, was carrying a bag, learning about those now, was carrying a bag
that was probably $500 if it was a penny. I'm not quite sure that the brand, but wow. She did not get that at Walmart. The Hill reports, Democratic Senator, sorry, I got to use the Jeffrey voice. Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema's office is pushing back against criticism of her Friday vote to reject a $15 minimum wage bill, with a spokeswoman for the senator calling commentary on the way in which she cast her vote sexist. Nuh-uh. Nope. Sorry. It ain't. Among other things, Marie Newman, who is a representative from Illinois, said, to be clear, her state, Arizona, overwhelmingly wants $15 an hour. But that didn't matter to her. And it's fair. I think it's fair game. Rashida Tlaib of Michigan said, no one should ever be this happy to vote against uplifting people out of poverty. This is Senator Sinema voting no on $15 minimum wage. Yeah. And she has been, she said, her spokes creep said, commentary about a female senator's body language, clothing, or physical demeanor does not belong in a serious media outlet. Bullshit. She did it to get attention. Nobody else did that. There were lots of Republican women. I mean, to the extent that there are Republican women in the Senate of the United States, and there are, I mean, for instance, noted Maine moderate Susan Collins. She voted against it. She didn't go down to the floor of the Senate and give a thumbs down and give a curtsy like she was in front of the Blessed Virgin. Oh, no. Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, defender of Neanderthals, didn't do it either. And Hannah L. Hurley is apparently the spokescreep for Kyrsten Sinema and said, I stand by what I said. Commentary about a female senator's body language, quoting her physical demeanor, does not belong in a serious media outlet. Well, the fact of the matter is that kind of shitty, snarky behavior does not belong in the behavior of a serious senator. And then by way of excuse, she said, I understand what it is to face tough choices while working to meet your family's most basic needs. No, you don't. I also know the difference better wages can make. Not that you care. I'll keep working with colleagues in both parties to ensure Americans can access good-paying jobs, quality education, and skills training to build more economically secure lives for themselves and their families. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and she turned and walked away. Because there's not a conversation to be had in the Senate of the United States with a single goddamn Republican, not fucking one of them, about good-paying jobs for Americans, quality education, or skills training to build more economically secure lives. Because Republicans aren't interested in that kind of stuff. They're interested in tax cuts for trillionaires and billionaires. They're interested in spreading conspiracy theories that somehow or another Nitwit Nero was the actual winner of the 2020 presidential election. I don't think there's anybody alive right now who was here at a time when a Republican actually gave a good goddamn about a working person. Yeah, oh, hell no. But the bottom line is, Senator Sinema's office knows that she's in some deep shit and that she did a nasty, shitty thing and that she made sure everybody knew what she was doing with her stupid curtsy and her thumbs down. Since when do you fucking curtsy the clerk of the Senate. Oh, no. No, no. I mean, Jesus, what a standard. None of how awful is it when you have to say, when you have to compare that with the Republican women? All the Republican women in the Senate went and fucked the working class, too. But it took a Democrat to make a joke out of it. And she has, and that's just that sick, gross, pathetic bipartisanship game. So she's going to be wandering around with a lamp looking for one single or two or three or four. No, I guess she needs 9, 10 Republican senators who will agree that the American people actually should not have to work for poverty wages.
And stand by what I said.
No. No, Kyrsten Sinema does not, no. I said early on I wasn't going to use any vile or sexually suggestive language because that would be wrong. But you can critique her for her mean cheerleader anime skirt. You can critique her for her goddamn $500 bag. And you can critique her for the rotten pettiness of what and how she did it. Let's see here. Matt in San Francisco, petty, party of one. I've never met a Kristen or a Kirsten that I've liked. but that's the one thing Kirsten and I share. We both have Y's instead of I's in our name. Jesus, it makes me want to put the eye back. I'll keep an eye out for you. Ah, shame on me. Oh, yeah, says Darlene. I noticed that bag for sure, and I wonder how much them snazzy boots cost. Old boots of Spanish leather. No, we're not going to fire up Sebastian Cabot, actor, reads Bob Dylan, poet. We're not going to do that. And by the way, something else for, and Darlene reminded me of this, something else to worry Moscow Mitch McConnell at night and keep him up nights. Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri has said he won't run for re-election, so that takes the number of Republicans bailing out to 5. Darlene remarking, "Aw, thank you, God." And so that's Rob Portman, Pat Toomey, Rob Portman, Ohio, Pat Toomey, Pennsylvania, Richard Shelby, Alabama, Richard Byrd, North Carolina, Stan. And I'd like to hope there's at least a chance to take the Ohio seat, the Pennsylvania seat, maybe the North Carolina seat. And dear God, can one dare to dream that we might stir up enough energy to put a Democrat in that seat in Missouri? Now bear in mind, that's not that you're probably not going to get a Bernie Sanders Democrat in any of those seats. And I realize this is probably a terrible time to be talking about just having sheer numbers. But damn. Meanwhile, then speaking of getting the electorate excited, what a fascinating little piece of legislation the Georgia legislature is pushing through. Having watched what happened to Georgia and how Georgia voters saved the nation by giving us Senators Ossoff and Warnock, the Georgia legislature is moving double quick, post-haste, if you will, to try to make sure that all those dark-colored people don't stand around voting anymore. God damn, that's ridiculous. I ain't never seen the like such things, black people voting like they wanted to or And, you know, black and brown people. I mean, hell, what and black and brown, yes. Oh, my word. I mean, the horror. And so, apparently, under this bill, if I've read about it correctly, when those 12 and 14 and 16 and 18-hour long lines form that people have to stand in order to be able to cast a vote in a place like Georgia, when that happens, if the Georgia Republican majorities in their House and Senate, and of course, Brian Kemp, the governor, who knows a little thing about voter suppression because he's done a little voter suppression, if he signs it into law, it will become, and get the hockey puck because this is breathtaking, it will become a felony to give a voter a bottle of water whilst standing in line for hours on end to vote. You got that? It'll be a felony. And so then, and see, this is how Republicans think. I'm not proud of being able to, you know, sort of game it that far out there, but here's how it works. All right, let's see. What can we do to keep the black and the brown people from voting? I mean, we already got them standing in 18-hour long lines, and they stand there anyway, and they keep on voting, and the courts say that as long as you're in line, you get to vote. Well, that ain't going to work. Poll tax? No, can't do that. It took that away from us. Literacy test? No, took that away from us too, dadgummit. You know what? They like to call themselves activists. And when we pass this here law that makes it a felony to give somebody a bottle of water when they're standing in line to vote, well, the activists is going to get all uppity and all excited, and they're going to engage in that civil disobedience. You know, like when John Lewis engaged as a young man, engaged in civil disobedience and kept driving his head into the billy club of that Alabama state trooper there across the bridge in Selmer. No, Selmer's in Tennessee. Selma is in Alabama. Yeah, like that. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make it illegal to give a voter a bottle of water. And then the activists all come out and do civil disobedience by giving everybody a bottle of water as they're standing in line. And then we'll have all the activists arrested and charged with felonies, and we'll convict them of felonies, and then they won't be able to vote no more. Hot damn, Harley, I think you done come up with it. Hoo-wee! That's better than a Chinese restaurant menu, I tell you what. And that's how they think. Fucking frustrating. Oh, let's see. Apparently, how did you find that out? Ralph's found out what kind of bag it was that Senator Enema was carrying. That's so juvenile. It was from Lululemon? Do we know that? I'm not seeing one that looks like it yet. They're cute. Frankly, the color of it looked a lot more Etienne Agnew, but what do I know? Well, Hannah L. Hurley can stick it where the sun doesn't shine. Don't want nothing. Don't start nothing. Kyrsten Sinema apparently has a lot of people's attention. David in South Carolina stand pointing out that Kyrsten Sinema had tweeted, Arizona's rural and tribal communities have been hit hard by this pandemic. We included budget support for Arizona cities, towns, and special districts and tribal communities in the COVID relief package to retain first responders and essential services. Well, someone by the name of Ruth H. Hopkins
subtweeted that and said, around 70% of natives live in urban areas. Native children are going to bed hungry because their parents are forced to work for starvation wages. Saying no to raising the minimum wage is anti-native and anti-American. And it's true on both counts. And she should pay. I don't know. I don't know if that comes in the form of a reduced approval rating. Is there a decent Democrat out there? Because, see, Arizona's a little different. You know, maybe Suman would say otherwise. But y'all might actually be able to find somebody. Because, see, the other senator, Mark Kelly, he voted for the minimum wage increase. So it's apparently not about how the voters respond in Arizona, Stan. This was some bullshit attempt to be a fucking moderate and doing it on the backs of people who are damned well working at or near starvation. It's fucking evil. But I doubt if Mark Kelly's going to pay a price for this. Is there an up-and-coming Democrat in Arizona? Because there isn't in West Virginia, really, there to challenge Joe Manchin. No. And that, and again, here, even if you successfully primaried Joe Manchin, it just means that you'd get a Republican senator in office who would make Joe Manchin look like Karl Marx. That's the reality I have to live in every day. But Arizona's got a lot more population than West Virginia does. And maybe Arizona's got some significantly better Democrats than Kyrsten Sinema. And maybe... Oh, but God, when's she up for election? Well, whenever, because, you know, Joe's not up until 24. Maybe she's up in the same, in 24 too. I don't know. But that gives you 3 years to organize. And maybe instead of having a PAC come to West Virginia and fundraise for a vanity candidate who doesn't have a rat's chance in hell of winning, maybe that effort would be better spent in a place like Arizona. Not saying, just saying. Stephen, New York, Kyrsten Sinema tells me we have some work to do on the intersectionality front. Well, you know, it's funny. Once upon a time, and it's also interesting. The so-called 11th commandment for Republicans was thou shalt not criticize another Republican. That's part of the bull in the china shop stuff that Nitwit Nero did. The 11th commandment for Republicans is gone and dead. But do you think there is? I mean, it would be nice if the LGBTQ plus community would rise up and picket her with their rainbow flags flying. And say, you know, never again. Because apparently she's having a hard time learning. She's having a hard time learning that poor people vote too. And that poor people like to eat food. And that anodyne bullshit statements about how I will continue to look for ways with Bart Kopp. Rest his soul or not. I mean, he was an atheist and didn't think he had one, and probably right. But every time, back in the day, every time somebody suggested that Democrats needed to negotiate with the Republicans, he would post a photo of a rabid, snarling, fang-bearing, froth-dripping, vicious attack dog, a real junkyard dog, and take your face off in a second. And Bart would ask the question, how do you negotiate with a rabid, snarling, vicious junkyard dog? And that's the Republican Party. They don't want to come together on anything. Remember, all that unity that President Biden talks about? That's another word for us giving in to them, which you may have noticed happened again this weekend as the Senate finally passed the COVID relief package. Was there anything added to the COVID relief package that made it better for working people? No.
things were taken out of the COVID relief package to make people, to make so-called moderate Democrats happier. And not a goddamn Republican put skin in the game. And it's infuriating. Had to run down to the settlements for provisions today. And on the wireless device, I heard come over the wireless radio some typical story about Joe Manchin. And it referred to him as him and others as moderate Democratic senators. Ooh, I hate wishy-washy language. It gives me the fantods. Maybe part of learning would be if the multimillionaires of the for-profit media would stop pretending that there's anything moderate about telling people they have to work for starvation wages, because that ain't moderate. That is straight-up, hateful, right-wing, hardcore conservative. And anybody who's like that and has a D behind their name needs to be called a right-wing conservative Democrat. And maybe if people like Sinema and Manchin and Coons et al. Started to be described as right-wing conservative Democrats, they'd get the idea that it's not okay to fuck poor people. Hit us again, Kirsty, and put a little stank on it. Lee in New York pointing out poor people. Sinema knows that poor people vote, but they do not fund campaigns. Well, that's a good point, Lee. Maybe it's time to take a look and see who was contributing.
Oh, we'll have to close all the Rippy Marts in Arizona, Stan, if we have to pay them $15 an hour
5 years from now. Alien Jimmy.
I never wish death to those who would destroy our representative democracy, but when I do, I wish them to experience sudden explosive projectile diarrhea while stuck in traffic on their way to legislate, along with a lot of sneezing spasms. That's vicious.
Ah, let's see. Could that be it? The Lululemon Happy Hatha How or How of it? Oh, that does. Oh, that looks like it. Yep.
Gym yoga tote bag in plum. And this is at Lulu Fanatics. And it's also used. And it's coming in at $130. Takes a lot of nerve to say, don't you dare criticize me for voting against women all across this country. Takes a lot of nerve. My second message to her from Darlene in Connecticut, even though I'm not a constituent, notice the subject matter line. I'm not threatening her or anything. Let's just get that straight, my dear Agent Fred. Issue, children and families. Please type the subject matter of your message, your childish behavior the other day. Nice try pulling the I'm a victim of sexism BS in response to just about everyone in the United States letting you know that they didn't appreciate your grandstanding little move the other day. It's clear that you meant to draw attention to yourself with your ugly display. By comparison, similarly pathetic but not unexpected, all the Republican women in the Senate also screwed over the working poor, but at least they took it more seriously and didn't make a joke out of it, all caps, like you did. You wanted the attention, so you got it now. The critique of your actions is fair game. By the way, how much is that shoulder bag, cheerleader skirt, and snazzy boots of yours worth? I also heard you gave McConnell a little wink, wink, nod, nod, pat on the back, so it seriously begs the question, whose side are you really on? I know people in Arizona that busted their butts to phone bank and canvas for you to put you in office. Oh, are they rethinking that mistake big time now? Bless your heart, Darlene, and I mean that in a good way. God, that's it. So, you know, I think she qualifies as our lead Moran for Moran Monday. And I don't like nominating Democrats for Moran Monday. That's interesting. Albert in Rhode Island says, we need to give the asshole senators a choice. Either they vote to keep the Senate filibuster or the Electoral College. Which one do you think they'll choose? Well, I think senators would choose the filibuster. Without a doubt. That's a no-brainer. Steve points out with the five senators that I pointed out, I named Burr, Portman, Toomey, Shelby, and now Blunt. Steve says, I'm thinking conservatively we could get three of those five senators that $5,600 from the stimulus could help. Unless the voter prohibition suppression is no longer sufficient, efforts could overwhelm that. Well, they're going to be nonstop on voter suppression, and those are all Republican states. Those are all Republican seats. So the only way to get rid of them is to overwhelm their suppression, repression, oppression, prohibition, suspension efforts. Can't get another Bernie Democrat. Lee in New York says, can we get a Democrat who has long mittens? Two mittens in the Senate is enough. Bernie's and, well, you know the other one, Bishop Willard. Okay, I'll be interested. Steve has a theory on how to get $22.50 minimum wage right now and get Republican support for it. I want to hear that. And we may soon see a sixth member on the list. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mill there. Ron Rubles Johnson, David in South Carolina, Stan reminds us, has said he may not seek re-election.
It's just too divisive.
Scott in San Diego, COVID relief and 15 an hour minimum wage. Listening to the GOP complain about Biden's big COVID relief bill being wasteful or raising the minimum wage going to $15 an hour is like hearing Heinrich Himmler remarking about Adolf Eichmann's bad table manners. Quality. Well, that's some great research, Ralphs. Ralphs dug deep to find her bag. And yeah, not just eight senators, but eight Democratic senators. Thank you, Ralphs, answering half of the 23 challenge. Thank you so much. That means there's, half of that again, waiting so that Joey and Giraffe's challenge can be met. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. Another word for prostitute. Steve in New York worrying a little bit. You're not going to refer to people as lawyers. That's good, too. So, like I said, busy evening. Silent R. Lamar said, oh, please help. It's official. I've managed to ram my head up my ass, and I must say, after seeing the space up your that up your ass has, I can see why so many Republicans have their heads up their asses. And in closing, the sonic boom you hear is only having my head removed from my ass. Just be careful, Silent R. Be careful. And so let's get this one out of the way real quick, too. It's been, and I hate it, I every time they have a baby, every time that old racist Prince Philip goes to the hospital, we are deluged with news of the royals. I'm so old that I can remember being taught that there was a time when this country was actually anti-royal. What a lovely time that must have been. And before I get hate mail on this, stop. Stop typing.
Quit telling us to stop typing, Robin.
Let me be clear. the big, red, great big, really big interview with Harry and Harry the Prince and Meghan Markle with Oprah revealed some sad and shitty things about that miserable family across the pond. But I never had any doubts that they were a miserable family across the pond. I mean, that's why we had that little dust-up in, you know, the late 1700s, so that we didn't have to keep bobbing and curtsying like Kirsten fucking Cinema every time one of the little princelings wandered into view. Oh, man, yes, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, your grace, yes, governor. Yeah, fuck that. But it turns out, who could have imagined, there's fucking racists in the House of Windsor. And I ain't talking about the cigar brand. And justifiably, there's been a great outpouring of sympathy for Meghan Markle, as well one might expect. Because when she was pregnant with their child, Archie, someone asked her husband, Prince Harry,
Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter.
Never mind, this is not Henry V. But somebody asked Harry, your grace, what color do you think your baby's going to be? And Harry in the interview would not out the member of his own royal family, who turned out to be a fucking racist, because it just would have caused more shitstorm back home. And that program is airing, or has aired, I mean, it aired in the U.S. on CBS last night. It aired in the U.K. on I don't know what tonight. And poor, poor, poor Prince Chuck is having his Instagram account blown up. And no, not in an Irish Republican Army way. No, quit that. It is being commented upon rather brutal. I say it's rather brutal, actually. With people talking about the fact that it feels an awful lot like Meghan Markle's being treated as shabbily by the royal family. Earl of Cloves, Jack of Hearts, Quarter of Tin, right. I just find them funny and anachronistic. But that's for the people of the UK. Who whatevs? We elected Donald Trump president. We got no room to talk. But it's causing a great deal of Sturm und Drang. And I thought it might be just helpful to point out that, well, when I saw the story this morning, I was like, oh, look. That horrible family is doing horrible things some more again. Because, of course, because just as a refresher, that family's been about as well. That family would have been welcome at any garden variety Klan rally in the last 100 years in this country. I mean, do let's remember, an entire colonial system that was based on exploitation of African people and people stolen from Africa and brought to other colonies. Can we, because history is a thing. And let's rush forward in history to, say, the 1930s, when Wallace Simpson, the American divorcee, married the King of England, and he had to abdicate because, she wasn't sufficient, her blood was not sufficiently blue. But he turned out to be a dick anyway, and went and hobnobbed around with Mr. Hitler, And thought that fascism was just jolly good, and jolly good for Mother England. So, there's that. Let's see. There were the paroxysms of violence when the British crown ran the Jews out of England. The Jews and religion. I say, Henry, it was Jews in old sport. It was the Jews, my good man. And then we come forward into the present. Back when young Henry and William were young tykes at college and went to Halloween parties dressed as fucking Nazis. Somewhere in his massive tomb, that old racist Winston Churchill turned over a few times. Oh, dear. The children have gone to parties as Nazis. Oh, I better get the palace press office going. This is not going to do well at all. So the idea that, you know, my first time I've tuned into my filthy morning habit in eons, and there's Joe Scarborough. Oh, my stars and garters, the royal family. Oh, give me the football news. Tell me something about Tottenham Hotspur. Jesus, it was pathetic. And pointed out that, you know, even Mika, who despises the royal family, which raised Mika in my estimation by orders of magnitude. Maybe because she's like, her family's new to this being an American business. They don't quite like royalty so much. Good for you, Mika. But it is, obviously, someone said something horribly, terribly racist to Meghan Markle, and she contemplated suicide. And oh, my God. It's Diana all over again. Well, yeah, kind of. It's horrifying, and it's disgusting. And it does not deserve the 8 minutes that I've just devoted to it. But I just feel like maybe this one observation is in order. And that's this. Racists do racist things. Now, Harry, and apparently this is okay with their marriage, you know, the royal family pulled their financial support. So, you know, Harry and Meghan are just out there scraping by. But they also pulled their security detail. And that has outraged the British public. But Harry still, he loves his wife, but not enough to point out who the racist in the royal family is. And maybe it's not what, maybe that's why he's, because apparently, maybe they just all are. Maybe they're a Clavern. Clavern Windsor. Oh, they're awful. Oh, aren't they awful? Yes, they are. But now, and you know how betting happy the English are. Stereotypes. But I would not be surprised if every bookie in the UK phone is absent and internet lines are absolutely burning up and smoking hot with bets on which royal is the racist who asked how black their baby would be. I mean, I say, do you think he's going to be Idi Amin black? Harry Belafonte black? Or, you know, perhaps Michael Jackson black? Ugh! Ugh! Turns my stomach! But I personally, I've got my own. I'll just put my own. I'll put a 1 pound bet out there. I don't even know how much a pound is. What is it? $1.75 or something? My money's on Camilla. Yeah. Because in a desperate attempt to make some of the controversy go away, Harry did say, no, it wasn't my grandmother and my grandfather. And I can certainly understand why you might think it's my grandfather, because my God, he's got a 90-year lifetime's history of being an
absolute repulsive racist. No, he didn't say anything. He just said, 'twas not my grandmama or my grandpapa.
Well, bring it on downhill from there. Diana's dead, so she's mercifully left out of this. They drove her to her death.
And she's just so common. But she wasn't. Jesus Christ, there are Spencers in Shakespeare, for fuck's sake.
Now, see, Roger, he said it wasn't, Roger Norton, my bet's on the queen or her husband. No, it was not grandmama or grandpapa. So, next in line downslope on that is, of course, Chuck and Camilla. And I'd go that pound note on Camilla. I might put a side bet on either William Dead Drunk. Hey, brother, how black you think your baby's gonna be? What I? Or more likely, his spouse. Didn't seem to be a lot of love lost between those two. But I mean, that's enough of that. It's an awful family that says and does awful things. And why there's any inquiry beyond that is completely beyond me. My bet, says Steve in New York, is on Andrew. Ooh, that's good. That's good. You know, we should probably just put a pound note on everything and be stupid. Queen Elizabeth II is technically Australia's head of state, unelected, Robert in Australia writes. QE2 is technically Australia's head of state. She's also the queen of each and every state, independently of being queen of Australia. So, you mean it's not Priscilla, queen of the desert? So if Australia becomes a republic, which we tried to do back in 2000, she still remains the queen of each and every state unless the states also get rid of her. The popularity of the royals has been on the decline for the last 70 years here in Oz. Good. The only people who seem interested in them today are politicians on the lookout for a knighthood or an OBE or some other useless honor. Why didn't we become a republic in 2000? John Howard, then the prime minister, was a hardcore royalist. Signed Robert in isolation, Oz, toothache, ow! Oh, I got one of those most every day, so you have my sympathy. I eat ibuprofen like M&M's, Robert. P.S. I very much enjoyed the Doctor Who that featured Queen Elizabeth X, played by a black actress. That was nice. I'd forgotten about that. Good call. Darlene in Connecticut says, there's still a deep and insidious racism in Great Britain. You can see it in the BBC shows that PBS features here in the States. I'm not surprised there was concern about how dark cute little Archie's skin would be. I just knew there were concerns within the royal fam about it. The fact that Meghan's driver's license, passport, and car keys were taken from her is just frightening to contemplate. Thank goodness Harry had the good sense to get her out of there. Diana was a factor. It's pretty clear that Harry was devastated for a lifetime by her loss. And it is to the couple's credit that they held back on revealing who the racists were, because it would destroy their lives, as they said, and they took the high road not to go that far. That stated, one of the best tweets I saw stated, and I'm paraphrasing, who cares about a billionaire Oprah interviewing two people that had to leave their billionaire family to become multimillionaires? As a funny little side note, I think it's hilarious that Meg stated that she forgave the future queen, Kate, for her misbehavior. Imagine a black woman forgiving Lily White Kate, LOL. Oh, that's the deepest cut. Okay, cowbell for that for Mighty Mouse. Sire, the presents are revolting. Well, yes, they are indeed. Pull! Who's the racist? Brother Deacon Asa says, are you fucking kidding me, Kincaid? Is that a hypodermical question?
Okay. Cowbell for hypodermical question. The only reason Chuck doesn't wear the Klan garb is because it's a poor fashion choice. And you can't see the kilt under the robe, I'll add. Yes. Absolutely, Brother Deacon. Kim says, I have a question. Joe, who? You think Mr. Manchin knows the difference between inflation and the cost of living? Moreover, for the first time, I agree with big old Governor Jim Justice that Joe's a politician. Not saying, just saying. Yeah, Jim hauled that one out. Jim's been in office for more than 4 years now, and he's on his second term as governor now.
Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I a politician. I'm a business guy.
And we'll just, we could spend the rest of the evening on it, right. Lee in New York says, I know a little British TV. I will suggest Blackadder. Well, I'm shocked, I tell you, Matt in San Francisco says. So you're saying a family that believes they have a right to rule over the peasants as a birthright is into white supremacy? Next they'll tell me there's gambling in this establishment. I'm shocked to find out that the gambling going on here. You know, winnings? Yes, thank you. Oh, Brother Deacon Asa said that. When I referenced that miserable family across the pond, girl, you're so going to receive hate mail from from New York, Steve. And bang. I'm going to disagree here, Steve, in New York says. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Megan probably said not to reveal who asked how dark Archie would be. I suspect that it wasn't worth the grief that would have followed. There's a level of truth to that. And then it would have been he said, she said, and probably would have given the poor old coin a stroke. Maybe she was having pity on the people of England for another year or two, because the good God, the grieving festivities at her passing will be, well, it'll probably bankrupt the country. I mean, you know, oldest reigning monarch and all of that. And I watched some of The Crown, and it was well acted, well presented, it was well directed, well shot. But I had the devil's own time. Scrounging around and, you know, giving a fact. Because that's just how it is. Royals, Jeremy in Vermont says, Jeremy's a flinty New Englander, so I'm hoping for good things from Jeremy here. Forgive me, but didn't we fight two bloody wars to be rid of all the British royalty? I couldn't care less about any of them. Hear, hear. Why would I care about a billionaire interviewing a couple of multimillionaires? It's so true. But God, we eat it up like a kitty laps cream. And it's a pathetic reflection on who we are as a country that once considered itself free. So that was precisely 20 minutes of time that I've wasted on those worthless royals. But there was another story I wanted to get to that maybe might not get so much note this evening, but that I felt like we needed to, because there's kind of a little civics lesson that I alluded to earlier tucked away in this. A report was released today, 13 pages, 16 pages, something like that. And it was released by Lieutenant General Russell Honoré under commission from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to look into the security status of the Capitol complex. And it says, it offers suggestions, things like adding another 800 or so members of the Capitol Police to bring them to a total of about 3,000 strong, taking down the odious fence that's there now and replacing it with something they describe as a mobile fence that can be erected at a moment's notice. They want a rapid response force that may or may not consist of Capitol Police and some Minutemen type National Guard personnel who can bang be ready at a moment's notice. And as I read about it, and of course the concomitant hissy that went with it from that not particularly fond of the United States of America House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who said that Nancy Pelosi is turning the Capitol into a fortress, and was upset at Lieutenant General Honoré because before he was commissioned to do this report, he had suggested that some members of the Capitol Police allowed their buddies among the insurrectionists to breach Capitol security. Interviewed by a Fox affiliate, Lieutenant General Honoré said, "I've just never seen so much incompetence, so they're either that stupid or ignorant or complicit. I think they were complicit." And that caused Kevin McCarthy to have a terrible, terrible, terrible sad. Because that meant, he said, that Lieutenant General Honoré had prejudged the situation and apparently formed a conclusion that the insurrection was performed by Republicans and Donald Trump supporters, which it was. McCarthy went on to say, "It also raises the unacceptable possibility that the speaker desired a certain result, turning the Capitol into a fortress." And I'm trying to... I read the stories surrounding the release of the report. And I found it sad. Because as far as I could tell, the recommendations, and it was well received by progressive leaders like Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington, who said that it was, you know, these are problems that were a long time solving that were ignored and needed. Okay, and I'm not gonna castigate her or criticize her over that. I think she's right, but again, it was the recommendations in this report are in the way of treating symptoms and not the underlying disease. Yeah, what do I mean by that? Well, let's say one has cancer. Okay? God forbid. Let's say one, and as a result of the cancer, one's hair falls out. Let's not get lost in the details here. Well, if you have cancer and you go to the doctor and the doctor says, "Look, your hair fell out. Let's get you on some Rogaine. Get that hair growing again." You are not treating the fucking cancer. You're treating the baldness that was as a result of the cancer. I know. The hair falling out, that's a part of chemo. I get it. Just work with the hypothetical. Well, that's what this report does. Well, you know, we need better fencing. We need more Capitol Police. We need better trained. They need to be trained in rapid response and crowd control. And blah, 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 blah. All of which would have been handy on January the 6th. But the underlying disease can be summed up in a statement made Oh, so many years ago, when the world was young and so was I. When a greasy-headed old B-movie actor, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, declared to the country,
yeah, well, Mommy, the most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And he wasn't the first Republican to utter that bilious horseshit. Richard Hofstadter, with his seminal work, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, identified this a long time ago. It got its roots in the John Birch Society, in anti-communism in general, in republicanism in particular. And it grew and it blossomed because it was nurtured and fed. Like a noxious weed in a garden. They watered it with the Miracle-Gro of Republican racism and paranoia and treason. So that now we find ourselves in a place where when the commission examined what went wrong on January 6th, they blew right past the initial problem, as far as I can tell. Because the initial problem, the genesis, if you will, lies in the fact that far too many of the American electorate and the American population generally, and I think our dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien would agree with me on this one, are woefully ignorant of exactly how this government works, how our government works, we the people, you know, and instead get their civic knowledge from losers and dead enders like the Hannity job and Cucky Tucky and Frau Engram and all of those oddities and weirdos and residents of Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium who form right-wing media who have told the American people for well over a generation that the government of the United States of America is a bad thing, but they've done it in such a masterful way that they've done it while waving the flag. If you want to not have another January 6th, the way to go about that is to educate people away from their willingness to do that. I'm not talking about eliminating protest. My God, I'm not old enough to have a working memory of the anti-war protests in D.C. of the late 1960s. And I know there was some violence on campuses. There was a bombing at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Bills told me about that one because he was a student there at the time. But there was nothing even remotely resembling what happened on January the 6th. The fact that the nearest comparison to what happened on January 6th was an invading army of mostly Canadians burning the Capitol in 1814 tells us a lot. It has been the operating system of the Republican Party to feed their deliberately undereducated base a steady diet of paranoia, fear, racism, xenophobia, generally bigotry, and keep them nice and dumb so that they would be ready when things like QAnon came along. And, oh my God, speaking of QAnon, there's a new QAnon theory out there. Yeah. Oprah. Mm-hmm. Oprah's one of them elites that Q's done had arrested. And the storm's coming, and Donald Trump's going to come back, and he's going to have them all eximacuted. No, really. It took almost no time whatsoever. After last night's interview with the renegade millionaires, Harry and Meghan, people from Bizarro World who follow the Q conspiracy theory declared that Oprah, get the hockey puck, get the duct tape, Oprah was wearing an ankle monitor. No, really. Over on Telegram, some cucumber said, so obvious. First few minutes, she was strategically keeping both her feet behind that little table, then got comfortable or forgot about the need to conceal it. She should fire the cameraman. Another person, people keep arguing that it's a microphone pack, but why would that be on your ankle? Yeah. According to Newsweek, QAnon followers also believe these high-profile child abusers will be arrested and executed as part of the eagerly awaited prophecy known as the Storm, an event that has been predicted to happen several times down the years to no avail. Yeah, ankle monitor. Good God, that woman's so rich! She was probably wearing an ankle bracelet made entirely of diamonds the size of the Hope Diamond. Oh, God. And that's how stupid. This country is. When you get to the point that one third of the American people are that goddamn dumb, note, your republic is in jeopardy. It took 300 or 400 years in the Roman Republic before one of the most sacrosanct rules unwritten of their civil society came crashing down, and after it did, and nothing was ever the same again. The rule was that there would be no troops inside the pomerium, which was the political boundary of ancient Rome, and that any general returning to Rome had to leave his troops outside of Rome, put down his weapons, and enter Rome in civilian attire. Well, that finally ended with, I think, the father of Pompey Magnus. He was known as Pompey Carnifex. And once that norm was shattered, it was easy for anybody else to do it, and everybody who wanted power wound up doing it. Sulla did it to get rid of Marius. And then Sulla entered into the proscriptions and slaughtered a lot of the patrician class. And the Roman experiment in republican government, and it really was an experiment because it was a one-off at the time, more or less, was over. They didn't know it. The people who seized power pretended that it wasn't, but it was done. Because they couldn't figure out a way to put the genie back in the bottle. Well, we dodged this one. But unless we do more in this country than put up better fences, good fences make good neighbors, and hire more capital cops, the problems are going to continue. And that means that people have to push back, especially people of influence and power. And you can't worry about what the advertisers are going to say. You have to say, listen, if you follow QAnon, you're a bad person. If you follow these wild-ass conspiracy theories that are fomented by people who want to seize power through the Republican Party, you're a bad person. You're un-American. And it has to be unequivocal. Because it's true. James Madison in the Federalist Papers talks about his dream of our form of government becoming the core of what he considered to be a secular religion. That people would feel something akin, because James Madison was no Christian. James Madison was no, you know, he was at best a deist. But he wanted people to feel the passionate attachment to their own freedom that people often feel about tenets of religiosity. And for a time, there was a little bit of that, but it was all marred by slavery. And in many ways, we never recovered from the Civil War. And now, in the era of the Internet, things that had to be mimeographed or ditto machined in the 50s and 60s now roar around the Internet such that one only finds out about them afterward. Jeremy points out there's another new QAnon theory out this week that claims that, oh dear God, it's a hockey puck kind of night, Barack Obama is the secret son of, come on, Hitler. Yeah. You know, he got spirited off to Argentina and maybe he zipped over to Kenya one day and right. And then, you know, some sort of Nazi breeding experiment and they found a woman from Kansas who was living in Hawaii. Oh! You know, the Obamas are friends with Harry and Meghan. Kind of wonder what... Well, they won't have anything to say. Mm-mm. No. Flavio says, you're right. The Capitol was torched in 1814, but it was during the War of 1812. I didn't say it wasn't. I figure most people in this community at least know that the War of 1812 was fought not just in 1812. August 24th, 1814, British troops, who were largely Canadians, marched into Washington and set fire to the U.S. Capitol, the President's Mansion, and other local landmarks. It was not known as the White House back then, the President's Mansion. It only became known as the White House because the young nation, recovering from the stupid war that it started, remember, we started the War of 1812. We were so poor and so broke, we couldn't afford to do anything more than whitewash the building, trying to get the flame stains off of it. And by tradition, it just stayed white. And, you know, in a nation that was whose economy largely ran on bondage labor, well, that was the goddess of irony working a long, long, long time ago. Q and Oprah's ankle, Matt in San Francisco, says everyone knows it's a battery pack to keep her cyborg replacement charged.
Yeah.
Oh. God. You know, the things we whisper into the universe's ear. Oh, apparently the secret son of Hitler thing has been around for a bit. Brother Deacon Asa says, that thing's been around as old as Obama's first campaign for you slurper-in-chief, Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. I'll be darned, I didn't know that. And I thought I caught all the stupidity. Robert in Australia, Brexit and racism. I listen to talk radio from the UK, mainly about Brexit. I'm convinced it comes down to being a choice based 90% on racism. And it's a hatred of everything not British. So many of the callers seem to think that not only do they still have an empire, but that somehow British people are superior to the rest of the world and entitled to special treatment. And they can't seem to understand that now they've left the EU, the EU is treating them exactly as they asked to be treated, as a third country. A country outside the EU, not entitled to any special treatment. It's odd to see a country shoot itself in both feet, then both arms, expecting to then be able to run a marathon and win. Indeed. Indeed. Oh, more possibilities of Republicans bailing out. David in South Carolina, Stan, mentions Quaalude Grassley is also considering retirement. Whoa. That would be six. They got to lose a couple of them, right? They can't suppress that many. Well, don't say they can. Never say never. There is no scientific comparison or analog for the determination of Republicans to keep people they don't want voting from voting. Mm-mm. And so I've filibustered the first half of the program away, and I should note that we've got $13 to go on Joey and Giraffe's 23-23 challenge, and if met, that would knock down that'd get us down to around, I think, 360. Let's call it 360. That'd get us down to about $360 to go for fundraising. So we could finish fundraising for Friday, meeting that challenge, and then another $60, and we'd be fully done with last week. And then there would only be tonight, and et cetera. Okay? If that could be met, that would be most helpful. Really, it would. Now, having said that, let's run over to the Skype line where both Scott and Steve are waiting. Hey, guys.
What? They're gruesome twosome.
Well, I'm about to make it more complex. Hold on here. Hang on. Wait. Let's see who's on the stress line while we're at it. Okay, who's on the stress line?
But that's Todd.
Ah, it's Reggie. Okay, we got Reggie. We got we got Steve, and we got Scott. Steve, I want to start with you, Steve, because you said you have a way to get the minimum wage to $23. This I want to hear, with Republican support.
Let me first of all say I am not a supporter of the royal family in England, in as much as I am a supporter of a constitutional monarchy.
Yeah, we've kind of had that talk.
You
think Alexander Hamilton was right that we needed a king?
Yeah. But I have modifications. I think we need to know. I would have the king elected, much like the monarch was elected on the planet. Queen Amidala was elected, if you remember, for the first Star Wars. But anyway, Matt in San Francisco said that he mentioned me in the royal family, and I just want to be very clear.
No, that was Brother Deacon Asa.
I thought it was Matt. Anyway, whoever it was, it's less about the royal. It's not so much about the royal family as it is about the concept of a constitutional monarchy. But back to the minimum wage thing. As it stands right now, you know, what was that?
Just keep talking.
Okay. As it stands right now, or as we know, Republicans love, the one thing they love more than anything is tax cuts. What we should do, at least right now, given the fact that President Biden and Vice President Harris will not vote to overturn the duly elected parliament, the duly elected from the people parliamentarian, wink, nod, sarcasm, etc. The way to do this is this way. First of all, when a business deducts labor costs are a deduction for businesses. If you want to get them to raise the minimum wage, at least right now, make it double deductible up to $25 an hour. Meaning if you pay people up to $25 an hour, you get to deduct $2 for every dollar you pay, which would have the effect of decreasing the tax burden for businesses, for anybody they employ and pay up to $25 an hour.
Okay.
And that would garner Republican support, at least I think it would, because it essentially would amount to a tax cut for business. Am I being a little too esoteric here?
No, I don't think you are, and it actually sounds way too it sounds almost plausible, but I think I'm just so jaded by the I don't think a Republican would get on board if you even called it the Ronald Reagan Wage Increase Act or the Donald Trump Wage Increase Act.
I mean, that's the thing too, is that Republicans the quote unquote ideology is less about what they like as it is about whose name is on it. So I agree with you there, but as a matter of ideology slash whatever, I think at least right now, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with that. In terms of a long-term policy, but I think that is a way to get them on board, or let me just say this. I think that would be the best slash only slash easiest way right now to have a much higher minimum wage.
Well, I think in the long run, though, I mean, that sounds like an effective mechanism, Steve. But in the long run, isn't the smartest thing to do to take it out of politicians' hands altogether?
Oh, no, I think the smartest thing to do is to index it for inflation and make it automatic every year.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they do Social Security and disability. There's usually a COLA, cost of living increase, every year.
Don't do a COLA.
Well,
And Scott, here's
why.
Well,
it's based on inflation, is what.
No, I understand that. It's based upon the CPI, or at least one of the CPIs. And that, if you remember, the whole issue a number of years ago was the chain CPI.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that.
So, I apologize if I get a little esoteric. I mean, I understand. I'm the guy with the finance slash economics degree, and the total contrarian here in the entire family. I'm the skunk at the picnic, as Mike Malloy likes to say. But I agree with you that here's what I think should happen is that forget about COLA. It should be, it goes, because a COLA is even still is discretionary. The Congress, it's still discretionary. Forget about it. It goes up every year by whatever the CPI is. Now, as an additional thing, element to that, we need to readjust the CPI because the bucket of goods and services that are in the CPI don't actually reflect reality now. Because as I recall, the 50 or so goods that sit in the bucket for the CPI, the government formulated that 60, 70 at least years ago. Am I wrong about that, Robin?
No, I don't think you are.
So, and I'm sorry, Scott, I talked over you and I apologize for that.
No, I just, when you said tie it to inflation, isn't that what you said?
That's not what I said.
All right, well, then I misheard you.
I said tie it to the CPI.
The Consumer Price Index.
Yeah,
Don't use the term inflation anymore. Inflation is it's never been an actual meaningful term.
It's a scare word, basically.
No, it's not a scare word. It's a real thing, but it's not quantifiable. Do it by the CPI, and we need to recalculate the CPI and include things like food and internet and cell phone costs and
things that are reflected in the modern world.
Yeah, that are in the modern world that everybody pays for.
And if the current one is based on a table that some bureaucrat dreamed up 70 years ago, it's unreality. It's not even relevant to today's world.
Can you believe that buggy whips increased 3%?
My, my.
Oh, my land.
We're going to have to shoot that horse. Robin?
Yes?
I have two slight corrections.
Okay.
One correction is...
I already regret the error.
No. Well, there you go. You said that we watched it live last night, the Oprah show, guest starring Meghan and Harry. We watched it live here in the United States. They also watched it live in Great Britain. It was like 2:30 in the morning when they watched it. Now, they may repeat it tonight for those who went to bed early last night and missed it. But it was live worldwide, according to what I heard.
Huh. I read differently, but that's okay. Doesn't matter.
Well, I took one for the team. I watched it. I wasn't going to, but I said, what the hell, I'll record it, and then at least I can zip through the commercials when I play it back to get finished with it quicker. But the other correction is the pound is $1.38 as of today, and I have a pound that I brought back from England.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Well, when I was over there in early 1985, the pound was like $1.11. I mean, I was making out like a royal bandit, if you will. But I did. I took one for the team and watched that whole show last night, except for the commercials. And I'm telling you, I have a hard time feeling much empathy or pity or sadness or sympathy for those two people. And you put it exactly right. They cut ties with, you know, mama and papa. And so instead of being potential billionaires, they're now just millionaires living in California somewhere, who knows. And I don't begrudge them their happiness. But I really have a hard time feeling sorry for their situation. I mean, they're probably well rid of any meaningful connection with that fucked up family. And as to who was inquiring as to the shade of the baby, I think they had a seance and brought back the Queen Mum for an evening, and she said it.
Oh my God, Scott, it's so fucking funny, because I was thinking, if anybody would have said it, it would have been her. Oh my God.
What? She took a sip of gin and said, well, what, I have this paper bag here. What would you, how does the baby shade? Do you think?
Pip, pip, cheerio.
And that old woman, you know, she lived to be, what, 102?
Something
like
that.
Yeah. Yeah. And drank a quart of gin every fucking day.
Well, but it's very good gin.
You ever saw her in public? She always looked like she was half, you know, drunk as a skunk with that kind of tilted head, kind of look to her face like, what the fuck am I looking at?
Oh, let's check. Hey, let's check in. Let's check in with Reggie. What's on your mind, Reggie?
Well, speaking of the Brits, and I hate to bring this up, but did you hear what that British assholic, blokish wanker Piers Morgan said about Meghan Markle, and his girlfriend Meghan Kelly said about it too, that they think the interview was that a bunch of lies, you know, about the Brits being racist and all that towards Meghan Markle. You know, and Piers Morgan got up all butt hurt, you know, ass hurt in his feelings about when somebody else disrespected the Queen, the Almighty Queen, who should be, you know, should be long since retired by now, but he's kissing the queens and the other Brits' ass because he attacked somebody for disrespecting their beloved queen. As if she's in, as if she's all that, man. She's not a god or a goddess, man. Y'all know what I'm saying, guys? We're only human. We're born human. We're gonna die that way too, right, Bob?
You know. Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, what? Who is she?
By the way, I have that idiot. Reggie, some credit. I think the word wanker is a very, very appropriate and perfect word for Piers Morgan.
Yeah, that's what he is, a broken wanker. But when he attacking Meghan Markle, and he had her namesake, Megyn Kelly, doing the exact same thing. And they didn't give the empathies or sympathies about the interview either. Especially when Meghan Markle concerned. And them to attack their child and the ones on the way. Ugh. You know, that's just despicable. Ain't that right, Bob?
Despicable is a good word. I can work with despicable.
Yeah. But they're giving their unwanted opinion about nothing that nobody asked them about. I'm talking about Megyn Kelly and Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain. Why does he still have a job, by the way? Piers Morgan, that is.
No idea. I didn't know he did.
Yeah. He works over there with. Yeah.
Clarification real quick, Robin, about Oprah's bracelet. You mentioned it was made of diamonds, the size of the Hope Diamond.
Yes.
It was not. It's made of mithril.
Hunks of raw mithril. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And they glow when the orcs are nearby.
Bob, I'm glad that Steve brought up QAnon. Also, because you have this idiot Lauren Boebert going on Fox News and saying that Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats are conspiracy theorists about what happened on January 6th, about protecting the Capitol building and its occupants, or should I say staffers, workers.
You're gonna love this. I just got an update in from David in South Carolina, Stan. Reggie, you're gonna get a big kick out of this. Guess who has chimed in on Meghan Markle?
Who?
The official doyen of American whiteness, Meghan Kelly.
Of course. What does she have to say out of a white mouth?
You're gonna love this. She said, give me a break. She's Meghan always claims to be a victim. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't this the same exact woman who herself was a victim over at Fox News when the late great Roddy Ellsworth said she was
her. But well, never mind that. This is Meghan Kelly, who was featured on Bill Maher's program a couple of Fridays back to declare that white people were being canceled and getting the short end of the stick, and of course. You know, this is Meghan Kelly who said, of course, Santa Claus is white. When in fact, the real St. Nicholas, down in what we now recognize as Turkey, was probably pretty freaking brown when you get right down to it.
Well, he wasn't white at all, in other words.
No.
No. What about blackface? And she said something about blackface.
No. But I thought you'd get a kick out of it.
What does she have to do with the Brits at all?
I'm sorry. Who said what?
Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi. This is Todd. Sometimes. I have a question for Steve. Is Steve the economics guy?
Sometimes plays one on the radio.
So I heard what you said. And I understand the theory, but see, the problem is that we have been the slow boil since the 80s, maybe. I'm being very generous. When Reagan came in, as to our wages have not stagnated, they have have gone backwards. We don't have to look overseas for cheap labor now. Yeah. And that's just a fact.
That's so, if you're a Republican, that's a feature, not a flaw. That was the whole point of globalization, was to take nations with high wage earners in the manufacturing sector and reduce them to the wage level of, say, Chinese people chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province.
Right. So in other words, now that whole the equation has to be tweaked. I mean, and you don't need to be an economist. I'm like number, you know, statistics, okay, but economics, no, I never took any business classes, and the business people never had to take any behavioral science, neuroscience, or sociology classes.
And the English major sat around writing poetry.
Stop it. But I mean, it's just like common sense. Cracker Barrel, the most common denominator restaurant. Everybody, every interstate, anywhere where you go, you got a Cracker Barrel. Two people cannot have a real meal for less than $25. That's before tax and tip. So I understand what type of work people are doing now for $10 an hour before taxes. So this is just one concrete example.
And the other one that I pointed to, Todd, the other one that I pointed out is one person cannot get a burger and fries and a pop at Five Guys for less than like $18.
Oh.
Man.
So, right. Do you see this is what I'm saying. So this whole theory, this is why the whole rules don't apply any longer, because of the rules. Do we have too many people who are living from the windfall tax, living off dividends, living off different things where you don't really have to work? People are moving money around instead of actually working. This is why the stock market doesn't mean shit anymore. This is what we have to come to realize. That is artificial. Yeah. And see, remember, you have to look. This is very important. And you're the economics guy. I want you to explain this to me, because I understand this. I want you to explain it. Remember, we have been at 0% interest for years now, at least 5 or 6 years. Zero. The people high up, who where we get money from, they're paying zero, which is exactly why we should be doing infrastructure, including broadband, now before it gets expensive. So explain those two things, because that just doesn't match up. So please, I'd like to hear it. You had the expertise. I want to hear it.
I think, Steve, you're on.
Damn.
Steve?
I think Steve dropped.
No. I still show him with us, but maybe not.
Well, he has to consult his textbooks or something. But I'm just saying.
You're not going after Steve. No.
No, I'm going after concepts, because people still believe Reagan was great with this trickle down, and the man who invented it said, "Yeah, you know, it was a terrible idea." And I wish I could remember his name right now.
David Stockman. Yeah, David Stockman. Yeah, he said. He later said, "Yeah, that was some bullshit."
Robin, you mentioned your filthy morning habit, which I happened to watch this morning as well. And what's that guy's name? Steve's, I think his name is Steve somebody, with the charts that comes in from time to time. He laid it out perfectly in terms of the big COVID relief bill.
Ratner.
1.9. Ratner, yeah. He laid it out with his charts and graphs, as he so often does. He made the comparison between the total lack of Republican participation insofar as voting for the COVID relief bill that just passed on a partisan basis, and not too many years ago, the big Trump tax cut for the most wealthy among us. And he did a side-by-side comparison of who got the benefit in both of those things. And in the tax cut, the vast majority of the benefit went to those who need it least. And with the $1.9 trillion COVID relief, the vast amount of the benefit went to those who need it most.
Right.
Did you see that in the first part of the show this morning?
No, I was I tuned in right as Joe was having his hissy over the Royals.
Oh, okay.
Scott, I know exactly what you're talking about, and you're exactly right, and it's astounding. And yes, Scott.
But the big comparison that he made, or the point that he made, was here recently, the other night, you couldn't find a Republican to stand up and be counted when it mattered. Whereas a few years ago, when that Trump tax cut was being voted on, they were crawling over one another to get to the thing to put their card in the slot to show an aye, a resounding aye in favor of that. Now, what does that tell you in terms of who's looking out for whom in today's world? It's pretty clear to me, and I'm not the brightest crayon in the box. And it burns my ass that there are still people in this fucking country that lap up everything that they have to say about everything as being gospel truth when they're getting, you know, you talked about poor people getting fucked. The very least that they could do is buy them all dinner and leave a few bucks on the bureau as they sneak out. I mean, if they're really about fucking people, I mean, anyway, it just frustrates the hell out of me. And I think, and Todd, you mentioned the low interest, the zero interest, and the infrastructure. That ought to be Biden's next thing. A big honking infrastructure bill, which will be relevant and useful in today's world, because God knows we're not keeping up the fucking bridges and the roads and the electrical system and the water system and the, you know, there's parts of this country that are still using dial-up internet, for fuck's sake. Anyway, I'll pause
right,
now.
Scott.
I'll pause now because I'm getting worked up.
No, and I want to build on what you said, because that's right. If in other words, and going back, I want to start backwards a little bit to what you alluded to, not alluded, but stated. These people, they just don't. In other words, I remember, I can see when that last rat fuck. The guy who was the Treasury who had his wife and they were holding up money for pictures. I had that just. Okay. You know who I'm talking about. The last administration.
Yeah.
Mnuchin.
Yeah.
That money, he said, oh, we got the money out so fast and so proud of ourselves. That money went straight out to the wealthy so fast. We didn't even see it. We didn't smell it. We didn't, nothing. That money was gone. That was a lot of money just gone right off the top. Boom. Nobody ever saw it except for the cronies. And that's what you were talking about. You know, that's what you mean.
The way that they did it with that tax cut was so disingenuous. Not only did the vast majority of the wealth go to the people who needed it least, but the crumbs that the rest of the people got was in the form of tax relief, which was temporary and is due to sunset in a couple of years. Am I right on that?
You're absolutely correct.
Yep.
There you go.
The wealthy got the permanent 20%, permanent 20, unless we do something, 20%, 20%.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're willingly blind. They're just, and they know. See, here's the problem with the QAnon. They know that there's a problem, But it's a made-up problem that they're out there ranting and raving about. I'm surprised they're not wearing three-cornered hats and puffy shirts and waving flintlocks.
Oh, Scott, dude, that is so 2010.
Well, I know. That's that Tea Party thing. But they're fucking morons.
Let me ask you guys this, because this is the big debate now. And this totally ties into what we're talking about, even though I'm tangent, man. I'm going to stay focused. All right. So the infrastructure, if that cannot build goodwill, what can? We all use roads and bridges and public transit. Everybody uses that. Everyone, and including broadband. Now broadband has to be a part of that. And if we don't understand that now, we never will. We see you can work from home now. Kids need to learn. It's just a part of society. The government doesn't print as many forms as they used to because they rely on people to download and print what they need or just do everything digitally and paperless and, you know, PDF it. So that's a necessity. It's an absolute necessity. But look how much this administration has gotten done in such a short amount of time.
It is kind of breathtaking, isn't it?
It is a good, and see, I feel bad because I think I dump on you guys a lot when I call it. I'm probably pretty too negative. I'm sorry.
What are you talking about? Pardon? No.
Okay. Well,
there's sort of a historical record that this program forms a sort of a historical record of what we think at any given time. And it wasn't that long back that, based on the news that I was reading and decent information, that I figured I would not see a vaccine November, December, and I'm getting it on Thursday. That has nothing to do with Donald Trump, and it has even less to do with Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. It has everything to do with the concerted effort being made by this administration to clean up the mess that they were handed to begin with. So I don't know. It is astonishing.
Well, you're not being negative. It's not at all negative to look at various situations and put your brain to work and see it for what it is and to say it out loud. There's nothing negative about that. As a matter of fact, that helps us. That helps the country. And people that say, well, you liberals, you elites, God knows, I'm no more elite than, you know, I'm not an elite at all. I mean, just barely keeping body and soul together, you know. So I'm not a fucking elite. I am a liberal. But they lie. And if that's too strong a term, we'll call it terminological inexactitudes. But the bottom line is they have been fucking us. The vast majority of people in this country have been just fucked over for generations. And they're tired of it.
Well, you must have heard what I heard this morning with Scott Ratner when he described the numbers of people that, you know, were pulled out of poverty. And because he said Roosevelt before, I was thinking of it. I was like, yes, this is big, like the New Deal. This is they keep this momentum going. This is like the New Deal that we've needed. Do you remember that part?
Yeah. And really, Biden is whatever you want to say about him, he's the right person for this particular situation. You know, because he's not.
Scott, I confess, I wish he was a little bit more. I wish he had a little. And I say this cautiously. I wish he was a little bit more LBJ. There needs to be a little bit more arm twisting going on. I mean, look, Joe Manchin played Queen of the May and eventually voted for the bill. once it had been made sufficiently shitty and mean to meet his shitty and mean standards.
Yeah. Now, LBJ, and that's a good example to give.
But LBJ had a bigger majority to deal with in the Senate than 50-50, so yeah, that comes with it. That's the caveat that attaches to all of this.
But you're right to mention him because of his time in the Senate, he knew how the place worked, and he knew what everybody wanted and needed. And if it took putting a dam in Senator so-and-so's state, then we'll go ahead and put the dam in Senator so-and-so's state. They're bringing that back. Did you hear about that? The earmarks or what do they call those?
Yeah, earmarks. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with them when they're, by and large, when they're done above board and everybody knows what the deal is. And it's something that a state or a municipality or whatever actually needs. And it's not just something, you know, to get along to go along, or go along to get along sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and Steve Rattner actually tweeted, he said, the top 20% of households reaped 65% of benefit from Trump's tax cuts. The bottom 20% got 1%. The American Rescue Plan gives aid to those who actually need it. And then if you look him up, Steve Rattner, R-A-T-T-N-E-R, on Twitter, the chart that he had this morning is right there.
There you go. And the thing about Biden, and I think I said this even before the election or right after the election, he's building slowly. And after 2 years, the first 2 years when the midterms happen, nothing succeeds like success. And if we can plug along for the next better part of 2 years and show a track record. And that what percentage of people were in favor of
you do remember who you're talking to, right?
Yes, I know.
Little ray of sunshine. Everything you say is correct, Scott. But it is dependent upon messaging. And it's going. I guarantee you. This bill's a colossal failure. I mean, look at that. Poor people eating food. My God, we are. I'm surprised we're not making them sing the Internationale before we give them their bowl of oatmeal.
Well, it's funny that you should bring that up because I wanted to.
Well, isn't it true?
Well, it is true. It is true, and here's why. I wanted to give you just a brief history lesson as to the run up. To where we are today. You were talking about how it's been a
Scott's going to take a minute.
It's been a generation or more. In my mind, it goes back to 1964 when a guy named John Stormer of Altoona, Pennsylvania, wrote a little book in 1964, None Dare Call It Treason. Are you familiar with this book?
I'm familiar with the title.
Well, it's worth looking for a copy of it just to read it. It was published in 64 during Goldwater's run, sold over a million copies in the first 6 months. And basically, the line that they were giving at the time in the book was America was losing the Cold War because we were being betrayed by our elites who were pro-communist. So that was in 64. Yeah. Then in 68, he wrote a book called Death of a Nation, where Mr. Stormer linked collectivism to the work of the Antichrist and discussed signs of the end times. And then to outdo himself, in 1990, he wrote None Dare Call It Treason 25 years later, which contained the original book with an equally long update talking about glasnost and perestroika and Soviet propaganda. And just all manner of horseshit. And then in 1998, he wrote None Dare Call It Education. And if you read up on what those books were about and what that mindset was about, they built over a course of 25, 30, 40 years their case which was all based on horseshit to start with.
Well, that's also sounds like the entire broadcast career of the Beckerhead, Glenn Beck.
Well, that's where they get it from.
Right.
They have their little libraries of bullshit books that they quote from.
Wait, yeah. that was a thing, wasn't it? I think there were some little bullshit books. Oh, no, that was little golden books. I'm sorry.
An imprint of Regnery.
Yeah, little bullshit books. An imprint of Regnery Press. Let's check in. Hey, Reggie, sounded like you were trying to say something.
Yeah, didn't Rush Limbaugh have books to sell to the late Rush Limbaugh, him?
Thank you for the reminder. Thank you for the reminder, Reggie. We are 10 minutes into the third hour of the program, and I almost forgot. By the way, the guy who published a book called I Told You I Was Right, Rush Limbaugh, is still dead.
Yeah.
Is still dead.
Right. Yeah, he published the book, him, Michael Wiener, Savage Neil Boyd, Ken Hamblin, if you heard
him. What was the Savage Wiener book? Yeah, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder.
Yeah.
That was the Savage Wiener's book.
By the way.
Right.
Oh, Steve's back.
Yeah, I'm back. Rush's first book, which my mother bought me, was called The Way Things Ought to Be. The one after that was called See, I Told You So.
Yeah. I thought it was See, I Told You I Was Right.
Yeah.
6-1, half a dozen the other. Did you hear about his death certificate, what he wrote on there?
No, what?
I was just looking at it here.
What?
He had somebody put on
the greatest radio
like, host
you hold, yeah.
Greatest media person of all time or some shit like that.
Yeah, he wrote that. Well, somebody wrote that.
It actually said that on his somebody wrote certificate.
It. Oh, sounds,
yeah, somebody wrote that.
Sounds like there needs to be a revision. You know, maybe of all time, .. and still dead.
Yeah.
I think that's all I should say.
Also, Randy and PA reminds us, Ken Lay, Jack Welch, and David Koch are also all still dead.
Right.
And we are a better country for it.
And this just in, Generalissimo Francisco Franco.
Still dead.
Room temperature minus room temperature.
Oh, I don't know. He might be a little, if you believe in an afterlife, it might be a little warm where he is. And I don't mean Mallorca.
On Bob, I'm glad that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle finally spoke the truth yesterday about the hell they've gone through, especially Meghan Markle, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm glad she stood up for herself finally, and she was finally able to do it, her and her husband. And especially about their, you know, about their child and the ones on the way.
Yeah.
And they broke it away from the royals.
And they are both still filthy fucking rich.
Why do you say that, Bob? Well, they are, but.
Because they're still filthy fucking rich.
Right. Like you say, you don't have no empathy or sympathy for them in terms of finances. Right, Bob?
Yeah, I mean,
am I wrong for saying that?
No, I mean, I'm just not. I'm not. That's why I said I just spent 20 minutes on them between the end of the, and it was 20 minutes too many. But I did at least want to point out that horrible family has a horrible history of doing horrible things, and no, so I don't know why anybody thinks this is a surprise.
That was me who said I don't have any empathy or sympathy.
Oh well. Look what happened to Princess Diana, right? Look what happened to her. Yeah, look at what happened to Princess Diana. Look at what happened to her.
I hate that some little children lost their mama.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder how many little children, Reggie, have lost their mama in the United States to fucking COVID.
Plenty.
Yeah, haven't seen Oprah interviewing any of them.
None of those families were being chased by paparazzi or media because media and paparazzi don't give a fuck about regular folks dying by the thousands every day. I mean, they'll talk about it on their evening news, and they'll say, well, you know, here's what the number is today. But when it becomes reduced to a fucking scorecard, you know, an odometer of death, it loses meaning and impact.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? I mean,
why do? Yeah.
By the way,
okay, I have a question.
Trivia time.
Okay.
What?
Do we all know what the word paparazzi means and what the singular form of the word is?
I take it it's Italian and paparazzo, and I know Flavio knows what it means.
Mosquito.
Ah.
Yeah, it's about right, too.
Yep.
Right. But why do people care so much about... Yeah, they're going around. But why do people care so much about Hollywood?
On a completely different note, but something that's extremely neat.
Right.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Scientists just discovered the most distant, what they call cosmic jet ever discovered. It's 13 billion light years away, which it began to exist less than a billion years after the Big Bang. So it's taken 13 billion light years to 13 billion years for the light to reach Earth, which means that it's 76 sextillion miles away from us.
And even at that distance, it knows that Republicans suck.
Yeah, in fact, they found there was almost like a billboard that basically said "fuck the GOP." I mean, it was interesting because it was almost from the Big Bang.
Right.
Well, this may astound some of the Horn family, but I will say one good thing about Queen Elizabeth. Back in the mid to late 60s, the king of Tonga, the country of Tonga, wherever the fuck that is, came to England and visited with the queen. And because the king of Tonga was a head of state, they had a big to-do where they rode around in a carriage drawn by two white horses. And one of the horses farted. And the queen said to the king of Tonga, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry." And he said, "Oh, I thought it was the horse." But anyway,
that's not
okay. That
is a shout out absolutely.
Yeah. And Todd, you had something, bro?
I was laughing.
I know.
Todd?
Yeah, I can't.
I just have one thing to say real quick. Real quick, Todd.
No, I'm laughing about it. I'm sorry. Horse farts take precedence over any type of.
I have one thing to say. And then I promise I'm going to shut up. In fact, I'm going to hang up and just listen. But here's one small thing. The L train still does not go to the Bronx.
Oh, let it go, Steve. Let it go.
I love you all. I got to step off because I got to leave my office soon and go give my cat his insulin. But I'm going to listen for a while right here.
Okay. Well, I've got to. I'm looking. I'm trying to remember the setup, but the royal family are playing charades.
What?
Does it go like that? I think the royal family are playing charades, and I'm gonna ruin the joke. The punchline is everything.
Well,
and it's like Camilla Parker Bowles challenges the queen to a game of charades and begins to, you know, act things out. And before she's even finished, the queen looks up and says, "Is it a horse's cock?" And Camilla says, "Damn it."
Yeah, but on Bob, why do
the setup is better than that?
Why do people?
I will talk to you later in the week as we talked about, okay?
All right, sounds good, Steve. You take care, my friend.
Take care, dear. Bye-bye.
One.
Okay, go, Reggie.
Why do people? Oh, Bob, why do people care so much more about Hollywood celebrities passing away? You know, or people of influence and power passing away than they do normal people, or even their beloved pet, childhood pet. You know, people die every day, unfortunately. But aren't we all human?
Well, sure, you know. but you know, we are celebrity obsessed, and we always have been.
Right,
and so people tend to pay greater attention to meaningless trivialities because we attach ourselves to things that really you can't attach yourself to.
We don't know these people outside of what they look like or their name. We're not friends with them, you know. We didn't grow up together, you know. You know what I mean? We don't hang out and talk every day. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah.
And I heard that the Brits were pissed off about this interview. They were pissed off. I wonder if they're doing damage control right now. What do you think, Bob? You know, damage spin control.
They've been at that for a while. Every palace is in waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think I think it's embarrassing that the American people would give a tinker's damn what happens to that family. It's just embarrassing.
You have to blame the media. I mean, you have to blame the mainstream for being their profit media for that. Don't you, Bob? For us, or ourselves for that. So that's, as you would say, that's British people's problem, not American people's problem, right?
You know, it's up to them. They want to have a family of billionaire welfare grifters. You know, that's on them. That's up to them. Personally, I just don't care.
I don't either. But why they throw it up in our faces, I don't know.
Because there's a lot of people who find that fascinating or interesting. And, oh, someday I might be a princess. You know. We sell princess culture.
Right. Look how hard it was for Meghan Markle to live up to that full standard. Look what happened to her, right, Bob?
Yeah.
She tried living up to those standards, and look exactly what happened to her. She got, kicked out because of it.
Harry pointed something the end of the interview that was rather chilling to my ears, where he alluded to the delicate balance between the royal family, which they called the firm. Did you hear that? Did you see the interview, Rob?
No, I didn't. Oh. I won't. Oh, This is the precious finite time of my life, and I will not waste it on those entitled anachronisms.
Yeah, but sometimes even they can speak a little truth. And basically, the gist of it was, he was talking, Oprah was asking, you know, why is the tabloid, the British tabloid press, why are they allowed to get away with it in bashing the royals? Exactly. And basically, Harry said that the family is in on it. They're symbiotic relationship. Is that the term?
It's their grift. It's part of their business model, keeping people interested in them.
There you go.
Right. I mentioned Piers Morgan earlier. I mentioned Piers Morgan earlier, man. He's part of that group. He's part of the British tabloid, isn't he, Bob?
Yeah.
You know.
As crazy as he is, that I think wanker. David Icke was right. I think they're all shape-shifting reptilians.
Ooh.
I think there's an argument for that. Oh, and I got a story here that I've been and it dovetails nicely. It's a Moran Monday story, but it dovetails nicely with some of the other stuff that's been going on. And that is this. I was watching my dear friends Terry and Nikki's program this past Saturday morning, Trans Talk Raw, and I heard about this story. Now, down in Alabama, the anti-trans bills have just gone through the two houses of the state legislature like shit through a goose. There's a trans kids in athletics bill in South Dakota, in South Carolina, Stan. My God, they're all over the place. And without fail, they are always, it's always phrased in terms of, you know, letting trans people compete is going to ruin girls' athletics. Okay? There's little to no evidence. There's no evidence of any ruination. It's all just ugly goddamn bigotry, plain and simple. Hold on, Reggie, okay? It is aimed at dividing, at sort of culling the T part of the LGBTQ plus community out so that they can be dealt with and destroyed separately. But it's women's athletics are going to be ruined because boys are going to beat them at everything. Well, one, trans girls aren't boys. Okay, they're just not. And if puberty has been halted, scientifically, we know if puberty has been halted, it's the same development process later. You know, these kids aren't on hormones. So, you know, that's bullshit. Just hold on, Reggie. So a news story came out of North Carolina, where, of course, they've had their own fits of freaking out about trans people. And it's the story of Heaven Fitch. Just like the word sounds, H-E-A-V-E-N, Fitch, F-I-T-C-H.
Right.
And she recently competed in the North Carolina High School Athletic Association Wrestling Individual State Championship on February 20th. And she won. She, a genetic cis female, beat every boy that went up against her, whooped them, wrestled them down. And yet there's no outcry about how the girls are going to ruin boys' sports. Because she was allowed to wrestle, she took a championship away from some poor, deserving North Carolina boy. Because she whipped his ass. And every other boy she went up against. She didn't have any, there was no handicapping. She didn't have any special privileges. She was just really a good wrestler and went in and beat them all. Now, here's the real takeaway on this. There are at least 13 anti-trans sports bills presently in legislatures around the country. And if one of those bills had been enacted into law in North Carolina, Heaven Fitch would not have been able to claim, to win, to train, and take that championship. She is the state champion in her class. And all of these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians. Well, they're not worried about Heaven Fitch, I guess. Oh, them boys are still going to ruin girl sports. They ain't real girls. And they say, well, why can't they come up with like a sports league for trans kids? One, there's not many of them. And two, why should we go back and revisit separate but equal? Because that's what we're talking about.
Why not just have sports now?
Well, there's no girls wrestling because there's just not a whole lot of there.
We already have girls playing football now. Just sports, and that's just and have people grow into it. When I say grow into it. We genetically, we're getting larger. We are big people, much bigger than we were just 200 years ago. We're bigger people.
Well, the bottom line is, she could not have had that groundbreaking victory in the following: Montana, Mississippi, Georgia, South Dakota, Tennessee, Arizona, Missouri, North Dakota, Connecticut, Utah, New Hampshire, or Oklahoma, if any of those bills became law. So, you know, Texas made a trans boy wrestle against girls.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
But this puts the lie to that whole stupid argument, and I despise it. But it's got to be a little embarrassing for them. But the bottom line is, they don't care about sports. And they don't care about trans boys competing. No. It's all about hatred for the trans feminine. Plain and simple. And these are just kids who want to participate in athletics.
It's such bullshit legislation that they actually had to have a state assembly and a state senate and a governor who would bring that bullshit into being, put it on the fucking books, and meanwhile, I mean, hatred aside, as awful as hatred is, there's meaningful things that state assemblies and senates and governors should be focusing on, and they're fiddle-fucking their time away with bullshit like that. And then you add the hatred and the intolerance layer to it, and it's just craziness. But they've got to appeal to their thumpers, their Bible thumpers. Got to keep them, them Christians happy. And it makes me, and all those states that you mentioned, I'll bet you every last one of them is a predominantly red state, except when they regain whatever the opposite of taking leave of their senses is. And vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad, and I may hear back from Darlene. It's kind of sad that Connecticut's included in that. What the hell are they thinking?
They should know better. These other states, you can understand where it's coming from. But Jesus, Connecticut, that's like a reliably blue state, mostly, in the modern era.
Oh, and by the way, we are $3 away from finishing Joey and Giraffe's challenge. And if we raise that $3, we can then be only $60 away from finishing fundraising for last week.
$3? That's how much Mitch McConnell should be making every year for his job.
Yeah, making license plates.
Oh, shit. You sound deadly serious. Damn, Bob.
But no, we're $63 away from finishing last week's fundraising. And then we'll struggle through this. But Jeremy jumped in and knocked down the lion's share of what remained of Joey and Giraffe's 23-23 challenge, noting bills don't pay themselves, and no, they don't. And it is a constant struggle, but you know, hopefully we'll get there. But thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Ralphs. Those are the two members of this community who have responded to Joey and Giraffe's challenge. And that's really helpful indeed. Thank you both so much.
I have a quick TV question. This is related to the alternative community, I guess. There was a character on The Wire, and I don't know if it was a young man or a young woman. But they portrayed themselves as a guy. But maybe it was a girl. And like she was like a hitman. I don't know if anybody has seen this. You know, it's an old show, The Wire, and I don't remember the character's name. But, so I guess nobody's commenting, I guess, because this is way back. You know, The Wire's old. That's from the 90s.
Well, Todd, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I have never watched The Wire. And
that's one to spend time with, Scott.
Isn't that a Barry Levinson project?
Yeah. It is the whole, oh boy.
As much as I love Homicide, Life on the Street, I should as Robin says, spend some time with that show, because I have access to it. So unlike HBO Max, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you might want to. Yeah, this is like pre. This is
no, not Barry. Film. Not Barry Levinson. David Simon.
Or David Simon. Who was pivotal in Homicide, because it came out of his reporting on the Baltimore Sun. Basically, came from the book. But anyway, all right. I will. I'll put that on my list. I watched. I told you this last time I talked to you. I watched. The thing that you told me to watch, Motherless Brooklyn. God damn, that was a good film.
Wasn't it just? I loved it. I'd love to see some more of Jonathan Lethem's work turn into movies. But there's some there's a couple that are so stream of consciousness. I don't know how you'd go about doing it.
I don't know, and I've always liked Edward Norton.
Fantastic actor.
I don't think there's been a film that I've seen him in that I have not liked.
Pardon my clacking.
Are you clacking?
Yes, I was typing. I was trying to remember, because I had read a number of his books, and one of his earliest ones was called Gun with Occasional Music.
It's a great title.
And that goes back to the early 90s. Motherless Brooklyn, The Fortress of Solitude. And is great with a joke. And so I need to go back and read. Yeah, because that's what I was trying to. That's what I meant when I said that I don't know how you'd turn some of this early stuff into a movie. Because Gun with Occasional Music features talking kangaroos.
That sounds like Kurt Vonnegut. That's why a lot of his work, which was brilliant in print, either didn't get made into a movie, or the one or two that were made into films were not really all that well done. And he had that really, kind of twisted style. I used to love Vonnegut's books. I don't know why I stopped reading them.
There is not a book he's written that's not fantastic. The other ones that I've read Amnesia Moon, that's well worth it. And As She Climbed Across the Table. And all of them have these really thought-provoking, interesting, sort of surreal concepts. But he's, MacArthur Genius Grant, all kinds of stuff.
Well, he always has his certain take on things. Kurt Vonnegut does.
Well, Todd, I highly recommend that you read some Jonathan Lethem.
L-E-T-H-E-M.
E-M. L-E-T-H-E-M.
Yeah. Okay. Check that out.
He's about a year younger than me. Oh, and speaking of authors, a great conversation coming tomorrow on the program. My friend Barry Friedman, who has published a book, a memoir called "The Joke Was on Me," and it focuses on his 30 years of life on the road as a stand-up comedian.
I saw your post about that. That's going to be tomorrow?
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be good. And I'm going to spend the evening going back over the book again with my little highlighter and my little fine point pen where I can make notes. It turns funny and unsparingly self-critical. Powerful, powerful stuff.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, but I have to get this off my chest.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking of it. This is nothing related to what we're talking about now at all. But you know, with these, people have been talking about stimulus payments, and I never got the first one ever. And I'm going to make sure I try to get a piece of this one if I can. Who knows? But the people out here complaining that they didn't need the money and they don't understand this and that, and they don't like people getting SNAP. You know, the simple answer to that is look at the TV, look at the goddamn news. And I don't know about you people. Yeah, I said you people. However, I've not ever seen food lines like I've seen recently in my lifetime, ever, ever. Like the helicopter has to be up to get the full range of the food line. So if you don't want that money and if you don't feel like you need it, this is all electronic, man. You can order food from Amazon or Walmart or your local grocery store, and they will deliver it to the food bank of your choice. And then you don't have to worry about it. And you know it's going to a good place. So I would suggest that this is just me. Whenever you
brilliant someone, suggestion.
You're around people. Yeah. Because there are, I'm around people like who have money and they complain like, well, we'll send it to the food bank. Did you think of that? See, and that is right. You see how you got quiet? It was shoving the fuck up.
Right, and so we went through this. Well, you know, Joe Manchin saying, "Well, you know, I don't want the wrong people to get the money." I mean, there's people that aren't hurting. I hate the idea of turning it into an entitlement, so that Republicans can. Well, you know, that was just a bunch of welfare. Fuck that.
It's not.
I mean, it'd be nice. Give it to give the $1,400 to everybody, and anybody that doesn't want it, give it to the food bank.
People. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody should be getting a food stamp card because the most you can get is $200 a month. And remember, a lot of people don't have potable water in their communities right now, which means you got to pay money for water that you can drink and probably bathe with because your water's polluted. So it's not just food, it's water also.
Yeah.
And since we don't have a good healthcare system, the best thing you can do is eat well and have fresh fruits and vegetables and juices.
Well, every time I buy a bag of ice and, you know, when summertime cooking comes, I don't like to be running back and forth and back and forth when I'm cooking outside. So I got a couple of ice chests and whatever I'm working with will go in the ice chest. So I always go and buy bags of ice. And on the label on the ice bag always says, remember, ice is food.
Mm.
And at first I looked at that and was like, really? That's kind of, but it's true. And I think you can actually buy ice with EBT.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some people it's vitally important. Oh yeah, and the character, both Kevin and David in South Carolina, Stan, have said, Todd, that character on The Wire's name was Snoop.
Snoop. See, I knew somebody would know. Yeah, thank you, fellas. People. Yeah, see. And I guess, I don't know. I can't. But see, this is before, like, the whole people being who they are issue was big. Because this is, like, early, mid-90s. You know, it's a shame that people can't be who they are. You know what I mean? Life is short. And people need to be who the hell they are. That's not much to ask, I don't think.
I agree.
Does Lindsay listen to the show?
Maybe Graham?
Yeah, I would like Lindsay 3-1.
Lindsay Graham.
Well, I just had a note from Randy Radar who said, I gave my two prior checks to the local food bank. There were actually two prior COVID stimulus checks, and they both went to the food bank.
Go, Randy.
Go, Randy.
Yep. Okay, well, shoot. So what else is cooking?
Well, hey, Bob, did you talk about the the Democrat, you know, about the fortification of the Capitol Hill building, about them putting up a gate or something.
Yeah, I did. I did talk about that. And about the fact that as long as we're talking about solving problems by putting up fencing, we're not addressing the problem. And the problem itself is the fact that too many Americans are willing to believe bilious right-wing horse shit instead of thinking they're an actual member of their own government.
Yeah. And were they having a history about that? About them trying to fortify the Capitol Hill building so that this could never ever happen again? Were they having a history fit? I'm talking about the GOP and the Republicans.
Right, they don't like it, because General Honoré said Republicans did it. Well, those weren't Democrats on January the 6th.
That's true. And we got to protect the workers, man. The staffers.
Yeah.
You got to protect everyone. But why are they having a history about safety and security and protection?
Well, because Reggie, they're butthurt because everybody but them understands that the problem in this country is Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get rid of the problem, man.
Well, I've done some dumpster diving. I keep hearing QAnon saying that the liberal elites eat dead babies. And if this is true, they should have some proof.
Cannibal pedophile cult. And Hillary Clinton wears dead baby faces around the room, just for fun.
If they do eat dead babies, somewhere in these trash cans ought to be little empty containers of honey mustard, barbecue, and ranch.
Oh, you're awful. You're awful. You're awful.
I mean, show us your proof.
Oh, you're good. No, oh, no, no, no. Now you're going to make me tell the awful joke. And I'm going to hate myself.
How do you make a dead baby float?
Yes, how do you make a dead baby float?
I read your mind.
Two scoops of ice cream, two scoops of dead baby. Oh, I hate myself. Ow!
There's a Coca-Cola, too.
Don't forget the root beer.
And remember, I brought up one QAnon idiot, Lauren Bullitt, saying that we're on the D side, the Democratic side, are psychotically obsessed with conspiracy theories. I thought it was them.
I noticed that. Lauren Bobblehead Boebert. Yeah.
No, it's the Democrats. They're the one with the conspiracy theories, like we landed on the moon and shit.
And you know what pisses me off? They have ruined conspiracy theories for the rest of us. Once upon a time, there were, and I don't even call them conspiracy theories. I call them coincidence arrangements. It's like the JFK thing, and I'm not going to reopen that case, but basically you can logically and in a linear manner spell it all out and see, if you're willing to, what was going on with that. But they've ruined it. They've ruined it. They have got so many far-flung imaginary scenarios. I mean, it's just, it would be laughable if there weren't a third of this country that didn't buy into it. It would be utterly laughable if they didn't really believe that shit.
Well, you have to blame Alex Jones for that one. You have to blame him for that one.
Yeah, the transgender frogs. Sure.
Yeah, you have to blame him for that one. he's the one that destroyed conspiracy theory for you guys. He's the one that destroyed it.
Scott, I'm really, really disappointed in you. Because you just made me look up the top 40 dead baby jokes, and I'm just really upset with myself.
Don't lay that at my door. No, I didn't. You brought up the dead baby.
Yes, you did.
Well, I was talking about dipping sauce, and now you've got 40, the top 40 fucking
50 actually.
Jokes. 50, Jesus, it's growing. What's a good one? What's number 18?
No, not going to do it. Not going to do it. It's just wrong and sick and disgusting. and everybody has everybody has the internet, and you can just be ashamed of yourself privately without my help.
Your own time.
You know, anything is good with dipping sauce. That's what you mean, Scott. That's the
point. Oh my! Hey, I want you to know my local Dairy Queen. I'm so proud of them. They don't buy that prepackaged ranch that tastes like crap. They make their own. They make homemade ranch, and they sell cheese curds. And every now and then I have another, it's another one of my filthy little habits. I just swing through real quick, and I say, cheese curds, homemade ranch. They know it's me on the box. And I come around, and I get an, and they always give me an extra homemade ranch, you know, for sipping.
You don't buy the old school ranch in a bottle box in the grocery store.
It's like chemicals and thin. It tastes like spoiled Italian dressing.
I mean, if you're not making your ranch with ranch mix and buttermilk and mayonnaise, you're not trying.
That shit's special. Hidden Valley. You know, there's a recipe. You could sprinkle that on a chicken breast. You coat it with mayonnaise and sprinkle that raw ranch powder on it.
Oh, yeah.
And you saute it. That is a thing. Oh, my man, that is, oh, that's a different,
And you know what? Okay, so since the little tortoiseshell kitty came into our lives, the cuteness. I had finished off a bag of Cheetos. I hadn't eaten the whole, there's just a few in the bottom of the bag. It's not like I was just sitting there Cheeto binging. Quit it. But, you know, you get done, and your fingers are the color of, you know, Donald Trump's fingers because they're Cheeto dust orange. There's just your only other hope is to put on a pair of nitrile gloves to eat them. But I'd eaten like the last two or three Cheetos, and Little Bit, who has 100 different names at this point, she's Noodle, because when you pick her up and she doesn't want to leave, she's as limp as a noodle. Also, she's known as Boneless. I call her Gidget. Her original name was Sue. And so she ever so cutely and tentatively walked up to me and sniffed it. You know, cat, you can't hand feed a cat. They don't want anything. They don't know. But Baby, she's also known as Baby, walks up to me, sniffs at my Cheeto dust covered fingers, and takes a tentative and just tentatively and tastes it. And proceeds to sit down and go for the Cheeto dust on my fingertips. And I couldn't tell her no. I couldn't. And she seems to be okay. But God, she loved it. And when she was done, she just curled up next to me and purred. And it was like, oh, come on, don't do this to me. Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. And...
You wanted to get up, but you couldn't disturb her, right?
No, I couldn't disturb her. And at night, we got old doors in the mansion here, and she's figured out that if she body slams the door hard enough, it will open, and she can come back here and walk all over the mix desk and shit. So we have to block those with, like, you know, gallon jugs of white vinegar and thing to keep her from body slamming the door open. But all night long, you know, Agnes will wake up and go, "Did you hear that?" I said, "Yeah, I heard her." She's like, "Oh yeah, it's her." Wham, wham, wham.
Cats are relentless when they. A closed door means nothing to a cat.
No, no, Agnes looked at me and said, "Oh my God, if she grows thumbs, we're screwed." and we've got another game because I didn't realize it. Ferg taught me how to do it. Really cheap and easy Rice Krispie squares. You microwave the marshmallows, so we keep Rice Krispies and marshmallows and butter, and you just melt the butter, and you put the marshmallow in it, and you melt the marshmallow in the microwave, and you add in the Rice Krispies, and boom, Rice Krispie treats. And they're as good as you remember, and better than any you can buy in the store. So we try to keep some, but now we've got a new game called Hide the Marshmallow Bags from the Baby. Because she will either carry the bag around, or she'll rip it open with one of her little razor blade talons, and dump them out on the floor and play marshmallow hockey with them all night. I tell you, it's a little bit difficult to get a decent night's sleep around here sometimes.
I'll tell you a true story about mischief from kittens. Back in the mid-80s, I got a Siamese cat, a kitten, Miss Thing. And I used to smoke Territons back in those days.
Charcoal filters.
And Territons must have something in them that's like cat magnet material. Because I would wake up in the morning and go out to the desk and pick up my pack of Territons. And then surrounding the pack were half a dozen Territon 100s, each one with little kitten teeth holes in them, in the body of the cigarette, making them totally unsmokable, unless you wanted a hernia, you know, from the draw with all those little holes. And there was, I finally got to the point where I put them up on a high shelf that I knew she couldn't get to. And she ultimately outgrew it. Maybe she was trying to tell me, Daddy, don't smoke.
Yeah, she was trying to get you to quit smoking. That's all that was.
Yeah. But it used to piss me the hell off, I'm telling you. Little teeny tiny cat teeth perforating half a dozen of my fucking Territons.
Yeah, and so now with the baby, anytime I'm going through a door that I don't want her to follow me through because she is, like, fast, I have to pick her up and love and pet her. And, who loves the baby? Oh, we're so sweet. No. And then I go through the door, carry her into the room, and then just set her outside the door and shut the door as quickly as I can.
I got to get another cat.
This little angel came into our lives, and it's like we didn't need another cat. But
you can't have too many cats.
Yes, you can.
Oh, can you? Okay.
Yeah, I have subsequently learned something. I think they put catnip or crack or something in the Iams wet kitten pate. Holy! I mean,
has she learned how to use the can opener?
Well, no. You just peel these open. You have to hide them from her. She'll open her own, and she'll just be walking around. It's like, you got any more of that kitty crack, man? It's good shit, man. Well, where'd you get that?
I'm speak for you. I'm serious.
Yeah. Do that again, Todd.
No, I'm going to speak for you. I'm serious. No. Reggie.
Yeah.
Did you vote?
Yeah.
You better vote again, because you might never vote again, motherfucker. You're in Georgia.
Don't give nobody any water.
Hey, Dad, wait a minute. Hey, stop. Stop the presses.
Oh.
Stop some shit. These people don't even understand how this shit looks.
Sir, you're under arrest for bottle of water in the first degree.
You know what's coming next.
Get on the ground, sir.
You will not. No porta potties. They are not going to have porta potties. And we already talked.
Sir, put down the water and step away from the voting line.
Are you giving those people water? God damn it, you're going to jail.
We don't put up with that kind of thing down here in Georgia.
That's right. Is it moonshine? Hell no, it's water.
Well, okay.
If it, yeah. It's water. Sorry, Reggie. No, man, come on. Seriously. I don't...
Come on. I already voted, man.
Todd's only saying enjoy it while it lasts.
Oh, why didn't you just say that?
Because the Georgia legislature's working overtime to make sure you don't get to do that no more.
Oh, yeah, right.
Gotta have a photo voter ID and a and an author, and a notarized signature giving express written consent from the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Shit. But hey, we've made our way to the end of the program, you guys. It's been a grand conversation. We got a lot of stuff done. It was wonderful. And so tomorrow we will be looking at $660 for a fundraising goal. Ouch. But y'all have yourself a good evening. Reggie, take care of yourself. You do the same, Todd and Scott and Titanic Tuesday. Now, I promise, I'm not going to play hooky. I'm not going to play hooky. I'm not going to play hooky. But holy crap, we're going to be way up in the 60s, and it's going to be sunny tomorrow. And Agnes probably going to have to cattle prod my ass to get me back into the studio. Not like that. No, she'll probably have to threaten me or something, because it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be hard to keep me inside. And Wednesday, it's going to be even worse. And Thursday, 68 both days. Shoot. Maybe spring's finally coming. But I get to enjoy it a little bit because, you know, Scott lives in paradise, and it's all... Well, it's already probably 90 in South Carolina, isn't it, Todd? I don't know. May have lost Todd there, but Scott, you have yourself a good evening, and we'll go at it again tomorrow.
All right, Robin. And I want to hear that interview tomorrow, so I'll be tuned in.
Yeah, I will, and I will be at work tomorrow because I wouldn't miss that for anything. Scott, take care, my friend. Thanks, everybody, for keeping the program on the air. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Thank you so very kindly. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, about 58 minutes from now, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is right here at HeadOn.live. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Pay attention to your local state-level vaccine scheduling. You may be able to get a vaccine sooner than you thought. I sure hope you can. But even after there was guidance released by the CDC today saying, well, okay, you know, if like grandparents have had vaccines and the little kids haven't, grandparents can visit their grandkids. But you still shouldn't fly across country to do that. Some changes have been made, not much. But it still means we wear our masks, we maintain our social distance. And in particular, we wash our hands. We don't touch our face. Carry our hand sanitizer around. And above all, for pity's sakes, oh, mercy sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, that Nancy Pelosi's trying to turn the Capitol into a fortress, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.